We're very fortunate in this country, and we must keep our rights, not just LGBT rights, but others as well. Because in fact, if people within the LGBT community lose their rights, other people will lose their rights as well. We're like a catalyst for everything else.
I'm Harry Hansen, and this is Beyond the Rainbow's Arch, a podcast which aims to shed some light on how history has treated homosexuality and queerness, and how the advancements society has made in queer acceptance have left some who grew up in less understanding times feeling ostracized from the community they identify a part of. This podcast aims to feature the voices of older members of the LGBTQ+ community, hear their stories, discuss their fights, and consider how much the level of acceptance that we've reached today is inclusive of all members of the community, no matter of age. I was inspired to create this podcast after reading an article in The Atlantic, written by James Kirchick back in 2019. The article argued that the fight for gay rights is over. He makes the point that sometimes the hardest part in a fight for equality is admitting you've won, and this was really interesting to me. I'm a 23-year-old gay man, and I live in a part of England that is known for its acceptance and celebration of homosexual culture. Alan Turing, the Gay Village, the LGBT Foundation, Pride Weekend, all things that have led to Manchester becoming known as a hotspot for LGBTQ+ people. My past, my coming out story, what I've achieved, and my day-to-day life in the city are things that exist with next to no opposition whatsoever. According to Stonewall, one in five LGBT people have experienced some form of hate crime in the past 12 months, and LGBT people are killed every day across the world. There's no question that there's still a long way to go in the fight for gay rights, and this is why I found Kirchick's claims to be so interesting. In the same breath, however, there's no denying that we have come a long way, and acceptance of LGBT+ communities is on a completely new level to where it was even 20 years ago. A lot of members of the LGBTQ+ community who are over 50 would have experienced depression on a vastly different level to what they would today, and this got me thinking that many younger members of the LGBT community, like myself, don't really appreciate the struggles that these older members of the community went through to get to where we are today. Questions arose for me, the main one being, do we have enough respect for those who paved the way for the lives we get to live? And thinking about myself and some friends I have, maybe we don't. I believe there is a generational divide within the LGBTQ+ community, and perhaps the younger members don't understand or appreciate the struggle that some went through that has led to a better standard of life for them. Perhaps younger people that identify as LGBTQ+ should take more time to work on this. I know I want to. As I mentioned before, I think it's important that we listen to the stories of those who fought the fight for equality. I've met up with a handful of different people to hear what they have to say. 73-year-old Bill, a gay man, told me a bit about his past when I met up with him earlier.
I come from what you might call an upper middle class family where the men don't cry, we stiff up a lip and all that, you know, this, and which for me was very difficult. And I went to boarding school for 9 years. From 57 till 65. So that's before, you know, the partial decriminalisation of homosexuality. Of course, you know what that was really about. That life for gays was even worse afterwards. Well, I went to preparatory school in one of the top public schools. And the public school I went to, the two houses I went to, homosexuality was rife. Everybody indulged in it, but it was something smutty and dirty. And of course, you know, nothing was, it was like a jungle. And there was no, I mean, love, there was no such thing as love there. It was just so, so horrible. I was in teaching for 20 years, a completely the wrong profession. I was ill-suited for it. I had my first breakdown. I thought it was to do with teaching. It wasn't. It was to do with my personality. Anyway, I went to see the educational psychologist. he said to me, this is 1991 or two, this is 20 years before it came out, consider that you might be gay. Of course, I rejected that totally. And when I got home, my wife, my then wife, rejected it as well. But I think we both realized we'd made a mistake. On the other hand, perhaps it was not the time for me to come out. I don't know. The 90s were not as open as 10 years later or 20 years later. I had a picture of me in the desert wearing a suit of armor, which was so tight-fitting that I could hardly breathe. And then suddenly it just melted away. At the time, I had no idea what it meant. After the coming out, after my coming out, I knew exactly what it meant. The day of my coming out, I'd been on a trip to America. My then wife fetched me from the railway station, and almost immediately she asked me the question, are you gay? I was so jet-lagged and exhausted, I just blurted out, yes. And this great weight just lifted off my shoulders, and I was free. Just like this suit of armor. A close relative of mine once said to me, and it was just him and me in this room, and he said, if I had my way, I would have lined those queers up against a wall and shot the lot of them.
It's heartbreaking to hear Bill's story, and when he was telling me, I saw shock in his face. Shock that I found his story so upsetting. I feel as though Bill hadn't really shared much about himself with many people before, and that made me quite sad. Everybody's life experiences are different, of course, but when I met up with Ken, I was shocked at how different his life seemed. Ken is a 74-year-old gay man, and sat in his local church, he joked with me about being born on the same day as Elton John. A similar age to Bill, but unlike him, Ken spoke to me about his past with fondness. Having come out much earlier in life than Bill, I thought maybe this played some part.
It's going back to like the swinging 60s, isn't it, really? And of course, Saturday night was wonderful when you used to go down Canal Street, but it wasn't gaily lit as it is today. It was all dingy and dark, and you were glad to get into the pubs. And one of the main pubs on Canal Street was the Rembrandt. And Saturday night there was all plush seating in those days. It used to get packed. And you smile, really, because you used to get in, say, about 8 o'clock, and people would be in then. Then people start coming in. And at a certain time, some of the guys just start standing up, and they'd be watching people coming in and saying, oh, he's a bit of all right, and all the rest of it, you know what I mean? And then, of course, as the evening went on, it got to about 11 o'clock, and of course, we used to go up to the upstairs bar. So the upstairs bar's open, so we used to go upstairs and have a quick drink again. And then we said, to round the night off, where we're going? So we all used to go to Napoleon's. And Napoleon's was quite a nightclub in those days for dancing and what have you. All the guys were there, and some dishy guys as well. And how many times I was hustled on that dance floor was nobody's business. But it was all good fun. And that was my early days of coming out.
As I said before, the idea for this podcast was born from my concerns that older members of the LGBT community, the ones who fought for what acceptance we have today, feel undervalued and brushed aside by younger members. I asked Ken if he wished more young and old members of the LGBT community would talk to each other about their experiences.
It would be nice, really, because, I mean, it's a different world like yourselves today. I mean, to them coming on the scene, I suppose, is a different world to what we was. I mean, it's more outgoing, isn't it, today? Which I admire them for it.
Bill felt slightly more strongly about this.
Do you worry that these stories, like the ones you tell today, as we move on over the next 50 years, perhaps, and people become more accepting and people are less ostracised, do you worry that stories like yours will be forgotten?
Do you know what? Absolutely. Because I've been thinking about this for quite a while now.
Somebody else I sat down with was Lynn, a 69-year-old trans woman who told me a bit about her past. Over a coffee on a summer's day in Deansgate, I asked Lynn whether she thinks more young LGBT people should listen to older people's stories more often.
I found generally, when given the opportunity, they do. They may be shocked, they may be find it strange, but yes, they do. They are willing, they're interested in listening to those stories and so forth. And it is something that it's just that the opportunities are not very often there for them to do so. People don't seem in the LGBT community to have that sort of cross-generational contact. There is that gap. As I say, it's not anybody's fault.
I went on to ask Lynn how she views the differences between the world she grew up in and the world today.
I think that it's a very different world they're living in. There's far more knowledge about LGBT in general, trans things. It's difficult for them to visualise just how oppressive the world was, even 50 years ago.
I decided that to understand this issue further, I would need to speak to an expert. I met up with Lawrence. He works with the Pride and Ageing team at the LGBT Foundation, providing support to LGBT people over 50 who may be struggling. Lawrence gave me an interesting perspective when I asked him about young people failing to appreciate what older people have done for the advancement of our rights. He made the point that this creates a unique opportunity for us as a community, which is something that I hadn't considered.
When we talk about life experience, there is certainly a divide because, younger LGBT people have experienced unique struggles, but our older LGBT communities have experienced, you know, a whole different decades of struggles and fights for equality as well. So I think there's also, you know, really interesting things to learn between different ages of how people approach these kind of struggles and fights for equality in the past, because actually a lot of our history can really help inform how we approach some of these ongoing struggles today. And actually, you know, we may have had people who have been through this type of thing before within our community who actually, you know, fought for change and achieved that change. And I think it's important first to recognise that and how that may have impacted some of those people, but also, you know, those intergenerational conversations just have such exciting potential for us if we embark on them. So I think I see it very much as like a world of opportunity that we have. I think that they are worried that it's going to be forgotten, because with all sort of what we might call, you know, minority histories or histories of that aren't of the mainstream and should be, in my view, I think there is, you know, a real worry that if we don't have these intergenerational conversations, some of these stories may be lost about, you know, Section 28 march that happened in Manchester, for example, and some of the, you know, institutions in Manchester were really hard to preserve these stories.
However, as I sat with Lawrence for a while and chatted more and more, he started to tell me about some of the things he encounters in his work. We discussed some of the major needs of older LGBTQ+ people.
I would say one of the main things is about knowing the history and kind of understanding where somebody's coming from, and actually, you know, the difference in experience of older LGBT people from decade to decade, depending on, you know, when they were born, can be very different. For example, you know, just even looking at sort of what age was somebody around the time of the HIV epidemic, for example, and how that may have impacted their life and many lost friends and loved ones through that period, or coming of age before homosexuality was legalized in 1967. You know, being before or after that can really affect sort of how you feel about yourself and maybe past trauma or the way in which your life has kind of panned out can be very much affected by that. I think the second major area beyond sort of like discrimination that people may face, which you already discussed, is around loneliness and isolation. So Of course, you know, older LGBT people will face isolation in the same way as all older people do. But older LGBT people might be more likely to be ostracized from friends and friends' family, for example, due to having come out. They're less likely to have children, so won't have that support necessarily in later life. I think there's this real risk that older LGBT people can become a lot more isolated in older age, and that's why we really need to make sure that older LGBT people can maintain a network. So whether it is, you know, having access to the LGBT community, our spaces, Pride, for example, I think that's all really, really important. But also accessing other activities with other older people that are kind of, or they may be intergenerational events pitched to older people as well that are non-LGBT specific. Actually, if somebody wants to access those, I think it's really, really important that those spaces are welcoming and LGBT inclusive as well.
Tony Openshaw runs Out in the City, a group for LGBTQ plus people over 50 to come together one afternoon a week. They also organise days out and events, and for some people this is the only social interaction they have. I've worked with Tony on projects before, and I decided to catch up with him to find out what he thinks about the generation divide within the community.
I think there's been a lot of changes in our lifetime. For example, when I was younger, there was just no media, there was no role models on television, and people didn't talk about sex at all, you know, either in church, at home, at school, never mind talking about people who were gay. There was just no talk about any of that. So I think today's younger population have got different problems than we had, but I think the fact that they have role models on television, people are much more knowledgeable about things is a big difference. It's like Black history, you know. We don't learn about our gay history unless somebody goes and searches it out and tries to find out about it. So, I mean, I don't know what is being taught in schools nowadays about relationships and about, you know, Alan Turing and famous gay people. But my belief is that younger gay people don't always aware of all the difficulties we had. And it's only, you know, a generation or two. And the difficulties and you know, what we had and what we had to fight for to get our rights. Somebody told me about a young gay lad who was 14 who thought there'd always been gay marriage because it happened 7 years ago. So in his lifetime, it was something that was there. There's gay marriage. And I think that's great that people's minds saying two men can get married, two women can get married, a man and a woman can get married, and that's normal. Whereas if you said to me when I was 15 that two men can get married, it would be like, gosh, that's impossible. It's not never going to happen.
Tony then went on to talk to me about some LGBT spaces and whether he feels these spaces are inclusive for everybody.
I think mainly gay places like, you know, Canal Street are aimed at younger people. Loud music, it's not something we normally would like as we get older. We enjoyed it when we were younger, when we were dancing. But, you know, now we're older, we want a cup of tea and a quiet sit down. It's quite different. So not all the venues on Canal Street are very friendly. Some are, but not, I'm saying not all are. And some I think are quite exclusive to older people.
I found this really interesting as somebody who utilises LGBT spaces like the Gay Village, a place I frequent to have fun and de-stress. The idea that there are members of the LGBT community who feel excluded from these spaces doesn't sit quite right with me. I asked Lawrence his thoughts on this.
I think that there's definitely a lack of representation of older LGBT communities within what we think of as the LGBT community. Visually, when you see the community out and about, you kind of think automatically of somewhere like, you know, loads of bars with young people spilling out or Pride, for example. And I think although there may not be sort of like a strict divide, I think it's just that we need to work really hard as a community to make sure that no one is left out. And actually our LGBT spaces are a great place to start and to think, you know, are they inclusive of over 50s? What would over 50s want from somewhere like the gay village or an LGBT community centre.
The points that Lawrence makes really sums up this issue. There is a generational divide within the LGBT community, and it's a shame that age is something that divides us. I think young LGBT people could really learn some lessons from older members of the community, and I'm coming away from this project feeling lucky that I was able to sit down with and talk to these people who, without them and their struggles, I wouldn't be living as free a life as I do today.
When you come out, it's not just always about fancying other men. It's a whole culture thing for a lot of gay men. So things like, daft things like even being a big fan of Coronation Street and loving musicals and a lot of stereotypical stuff, it all fitted into place once I came out gay, whereas before it just seemed I was a bit more the odd one out.
That was 44-year-old Paul, another person I sat down to chat with during the making of this podcast. It's a shame that I couldn't include all the sessions I've had over the past few months with an array of LGBT people that have provided me with new insights into the community. However, I thought it appropriate to include that quote from Paul as he touches on something I myself related to and identified with. Paul mentions that after he came out in 1998, which happens to be the year I was born, things in his life started to make more sense to him. The exact same thing happened to me when I came out 17 years later in 2015. He's double my age, yet we have a shared experience in that respect. And in fact, Bill, who was almost three times my age, also experienced a similar thing back when he came out.
I compare my life to a football match. In the first half, I'm on the sub bench because I'm terrified of playing on the field. At half time, I come out as a gay man. And in the second half, which is still going on and will go on until the rest of my life, I'm centre forward scoring goals. Once I accepted who I was, I found peace within.
I believe that a deeper sense of understanding and meaning becomes clear when you accept your sexuality, and I think that's always been the case with LGBT issues, and a lot of us have shared experiences, no matter of age and no matter of what society we grew up in. The generational divide is a shame to me, and as I said before, I think a lot can be learnt if more people were willing to have these cross-generational chats. Bill shared a poem with me during our chat, a poem he wrote but didn't truly understand until he learned more about himself and his sexuality. I thought it appropriate to finish the podcast with the poem. I hope the generational divide that exists within the LGBTQ+ community doesn't stay with us forever, and I hope stories like Bill's and Ken's, Lynn's, Tony's and Paul's are never forgotten, as I believe that when we forget what it took to get to where we are now, we run the risk of taking a step back. As an iconic woman once said, if we don't stand up for what we believe in, and if we don't fight for our rights, then pretty soon we'll have as much rights as the meat on our bones.
I wrote it 4 months before I came out, and it was my dream, and the first line was, if I could rise from the ground on angel wings. I wasn't sure what I was talking about, but afterwards I changed all the words and it became our dream, and the words are these. When we arose from the ground on angel wings, and like the mighty eagle soared high among the wispy clouds, we whistled into the gale, laughed at the growling thunder, and out of the driving storm, knew we'd see beyond the rainbow's arch into the panorama of crystal blue sky, and we moved through the breathless heat of the sun.
Written and presented by Harry Hansen, music by Scott Buckley and Yayo. A huge thank you to the LGBT Foundation, Out in the City and Pride and Agen for their help in the creation of this podcast. A special thank you to Bill, who not only gave me the name for this podcast, but also sparked a conversation I never knew was needed.